In ancient times, the scene that you're looking at right above me would have been very common to see. Would have been very commonplace to see a shepherd leading his sheep right through the town, the village. It would be just as common to see a herd of sheep on a hillside outside of town and the shepherd watching over them as they grazed on the grass. It's not so common in our culture, is it? But this is a scene that's very common even today over in the Middle East and in places of Africa and India. But this is not a scene that we are as familiar with. But the picture of shepherding in the Bible is very common. In fact, shepherding is kind of portrayed as the biblical model for leadership in the Bible. And so if we want to understand what shepherding is about, if we want to understand God as our shepherd, as we just sang about, and if we want to understand what the role of shepherds, spiritual shepherds is, then we need to understand what shepherding is about. So tonight I want us to consider what shepherding is, and especially how it is related to spiritual leadership today. I want to begin tonight by saying that it's interesting to me that two of Israel's greatest leaders in all of their history, aside from Jesus, began as shepherds. You ever thought about that before? First of all, Moses, we know that he was born as an Israelite, but then he was raised in Pharaoh's household. But remember, in Exodus chapter 2, he ran away, and in chapter 3, he became a shepherd. And it was only after his time as a shepherd that God used him to lead Israel. So let's go back to Exodus chapter 2 for just a moment, and let's pick up in verse 11. This is after Moses had grown up, and he's trying to deliver Israel here from their bondage to Pharaoh. It says in Exodus chapter 2, verse 11, "It came about in those days when Moses had grown up, that he went out to his brethren and looked on their hard labors. And he saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his brethren. So he looked this way and that. And when he saw that there was no one around, he struck down the Egyptian and hit him in the sand. He went out the next day, and behold, two Hebrews were fighting with each other. And he said to the one offender, 'Why are you striking down your companion?' But he said, 'Who made you a prince or a judge over us? Are you intending to kill me as you killed the Egyptian?' Then Moses was afraid and said, 'Surely the matter has become known.' When Pharaoh heard of this matter, he tried to kill Moses. But Moses fled from the presence of Pharaoh and settled in the land of Midian, and he sat down by a well." Now, the first thing we need to understand about Moses is he's got pretty good intentions here. He looks out on his people. In fact, the book of Hebrews says that he did this out of faith. He left his comfort and his wealth and his education. Being raised in Pharaoh's household, he had a lot of privileges. But he wanted to be with his people, and he wanted to see the affliction that they were suffering. So he went out and he saw them. And he saw one of his brethren being beaten by this Egyptian slave driver. And he naturally felt a sense of justice. And so he took matters into his own hands, and he killed the Egyptian. And Acts chapter 7 would tell us that Moses was thinking that his people understood that God was giving them deliverance through him, but they did not understand, because this was not the right time. If it had been the right time, then God certainly would have used Moses at this time. But as it was, this was not the right time for the people of Israel to be delivered. And so Moses runs away after he takes matters into his own hands and fails. And then in chapter 3, it says, "Now Moses was pasturing the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian. And he led the flock to the west side of the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God." And so he runs away from Egypt and he becomes a shepherd. Now keep in mind that you can break down Moses' life into roughly 40-year increments. For the first 40 years of his life, he spent it in Pharaoh's household. The next 40 years he spent as a shepherd in the land of Midian. And it was after those 40 years that God called him in Exodus chapter 3 here. He would have been 80 years old. And for the next 40 years up until his death, he would be leading the people in the wilderness. But notice that God calls him while he is shepherding. And I've always found that fascinating. In fact, he has spent 40 years as a shepherd, not shepherding his own flock, but shepherding the flock of his father-in-law, Jethro. So for 40 years, he has spent time in the wilderness, learning the lessons of shepherding, learning what it means to lead a flock that does not belong to you, learning to have humility as he cares for his flock, as he understands stewardship, as he learns to trust in God. And notice that in Exodus chapter 3, when God calls him and tells him, I want you to go back to Egypt and deliver my people, instead of being, you know, gung-ho all about it, just like he was in Exodus chapter 2, instead he says to God, no, I don't want to go. He's learned a few lessons about being patient. He's learned some lessons about being humble and trusting in God. Granted, he doesn't want to go, but he does end up doing that. And the point that I want us to understand is that in these 40 years of shepherding another person's flock, Moses learned some valuable lessons that would help him shepherd God's people in the wilderness. And you consider the fact that Moses was called in the Bible one of the most humble men that ever walked the face of this earth. How did he learn that? He probably wasn't just born with humility. How did he learn humility? Maybe it had something to do with the fact that he was a shepherd for 40 years of someone else's flock. And maybe this is a little bit of speculation on my part, but after shepherding for 40 years, you might think, well, Moses, you know, don't you want your own flock? Don't you want your own wealth? Well, he doesn't have his own flock. He doesn't have his own wealth. He shepherds someone else's flock. And so only after he shepherded another one's flock for 40 years was he prepared to shepherd the flock of God. And think about the lessons that he would have applied in the wilderness. As the people of Israel complained, as they grumbled against Moses, as they rebelled against Moses, and as they turned against God, think about the picture of shepherding as he's reining in the flock of God, pointing them to God. And certainly as he mediates for them, as he cares for them, as he has compassion for them. So Moses started out as a shepherd before being called as a leader. But so did David. In 1 Samuel chapter 16, Samuel first meets David when he's coming in from shepherding the flock. Remember the story how God tells Samuel to go to Jesse's house, and from among his sons, God's going to choose the next king to replace Saul. And so Samuel goes and he meets the oldest of Jesse's sons, and he says about the first one, certainly this is the Lord's anointed. And God says, nope, that's not the one. He doesn't have the kind of heart that I'm looking for. And so finally, in verse 11, Samuel said to Jesse, are these all the children? And he said, there remains yet the youngest, and behold, he is tending the sheep. Then Samuel said to Jesse, send and bring him, for he will not sit down until he comes here. For we will not sit down until he comes here. So he sent and brought him in. Now he was ruddy with beautiful eyes and a handsome appearance. And the Lord said, arise, anoint him, for this is he. This is the one that I have chosen to shepherd my flock. David was a shepherd. And it's interesting when you compare that to when you first meet Saul. Go back to 1 Samuel chapter 9. When we first meet Saul, you remember the story? You meet him whenever he is looking for his father's donkeys. This is an interesting contrast. You first meet the man after God's own heart when he's faithfully shepherding his father's flock. And then he's called in from the flock and he's anointed the king. But here in 1 Samuel chapter 9, we meet Saul, who has apparently lost his father's donkeys. And so he's having to go find them, and he's having trouble finding them. And they have to go to Samuel and ask him for help. It's just an interesting contrast, almost foreshadowing how Saul is going to end up being king. He's going to end up being a failure of a king. The people are going to essentially be scattered because of his leadership or lack thereof. But David is going to come in and he's going to shepherd the flock of God, unlike Saul. who we meet in 1 Samuel chapter 9. And one thing we need to understand about a shepherd, particularly when we think about David, is that the life of a shepherd was a tough life. I grew up watching a lot of cowboy movies, John Wayne, and grit is one of those images that comes to mind when you think about a cowboy. But I'm afraid that shepherding doesn't always have the same ring to it, does it? When you think about a shepherd, a lot of times we get this picture in our mind of David, you know, just kind of a weakling who is sitting on this stone here under a tree playing a harp to God. He looks just like a boy. I mean, he was a boy. And so we picture that, we have this picture in our mind of, you know, shepherding as kind of a quaint, pastoral thing, whereas life of pleasure and life of ease, green pastures all the time, plenty of water. But let me tell you, that's not the life of a shepherd. The life of a shepherd was dirty. It was dusty. It was dangerous. And we forget what David said to Saul whenever he was just about to go against Goliath. Didn't David say that I had to kill the lion? I had to save the lamb out of the lion and the bear's mouth? In 1 Samuel chapter 17, in verse 34, David said to Saul, "Your servant was tending his father's sheep, and when a lion or a bear came, I took a lamb from the flock. I went out after him and attacked him, and I rescued it from his mouth. And when he rose up against me, I seized him by his beard and struck him and killed him. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, since he has taunted the armies of the living God." That's what the life of a shepherd required. You had to be tough. You had to have some grit in order to defend your flock against the wolves or the bears. And David learned that by being a shepherd. Now, on the other side of things, there is the tenderness that a shepherd would have that a cowboy wouldn't necessarily have. A cowboy usually didn't call his sheep or his cows by name. He just, you know, "Go, doggy." But when it came to a shepherd, a lot of times he became very attached to the sheep. He's very compassionate. Whenever they would fall into a well, he would pull them out. He would carry him. You don't see a cowboy doing that. And so the life of a shepherd was one both of tenderness and toughness. And that's something that David learned as a shepherd that I think served him very well whenever he reigned as Israel's best king that they ever had. So I want us to consider these two godly leaders who first were shepherds, and then only after they learned the lessons of leading sheep did God call them to be kings. I also want to consider Ezekiel chapter 34, the passage that was read for us a few moments ago. And consider what the work of a shepherd is and was. Ezekiel chapter 34 is a very interesting chapter because God is speaking against the kings and the prophets and the priests of Israel. Shepherding, of course, was an ancient image of leadership. And so he's speaking out against how they have afflicted God's people. And instead of helping the people, leading the people, and feeding them, they've just been using their position to help themselves. And so God says, "I'm against you, shepherds, because you have failed to be the proper type of shepherds." Well, let's apply that in a positive sense tonight and consider what the shepherd ought to do. First of all, God says that a shepherd serves the flock, not himself. Ezekiel chapter 34 and verse 2, "Son of man, prophesy against the shepherds of Israel. Prophesy and say to those shepherds, thus says the Lord God, woe, shepherds of Israel, who have been feeding themselves. Should not the shepherds feed the flock? You eat the fat and clothe yourselves with the wool. You slaughter the fat sheep without feeding the flock." So you see this picture of these leaders who are taking advantage of the people, who are abusing their leadership, and they're using the wool for themselves, and they're slaughtering the fat sheep and just taking advantage of them without doing a single thing to help these sheep. What shepherd would do that? What good shepherd would treat his sheep like that? They are his sheep or someone else's sheep that he has been given charge over. No good shepherd would do that. And so you think about this, the image of a shepherd. A shepherd at its core was a very other serving role. Not a self-serving role, but it's an other serving role. If total selflessness is not his driving motive, then he's doing it wrong. If a shepherd is out to just, you know, take advantage of the sheep, then he shouldn't be a shepherd at all. But his motive is to please God and therefore to help the sheep. Think about this in relation, of course, to spiritual shepherds today. In 1 Peter chapter 5 and verses 2 and 3, though backing up to verse 1, Peter says, "Therefore I exhort the elders among you as your fellow elder and witness of the sufferings of Christ, and a partaker also of the glory that is to be revealed, shepherd the flock of God among you, exercising oversight, not under compulsion, but voluntarily, according to the will of God, and not for sordid gain." In other words, not for money. Don't do it just because you want to get rich off of this work, but instead with eagerness, not as yet lording it over those allotted to your charge, but proving to be examples to the flock. Anyone serving as an elder of a local congregation has a lot of responsibility and has, in a sense, a lot of authority over God's people. But he must take this in a very serious manner, and this charge here very seriously, to understand that his job is not to lord it over the flock. His job is not to rule God's people with an iron fist, to take advantage of them, to use his position to stroke his ego, or just to demonstrate his power or gain prestige or profit. That's not the role of a shepherd at all. The role of a shepherd is to give to the people, to help them, instead of making the people help you. And also think about this in terms of husbands. In a sense, I think husbands serve a shepherding role in relation to their wives. Ephesians chapter 5 and verses 28 and 29. And of course, there's not, you know, an exact parallel between an elder and a husband. But consider what Paul says here. "So husbands ought also to love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his own wife loves himself. For no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, just as Christ also does the church." That those words, nourishing and cherishing, are words of shepherding, providing, protecting, taking care of, watching over. That is our responsibility over as our husbands. And so the point is that we don't take advantage of our power or our authority. It's not like we're husbands and we've been given charge and we make decisions just to prove that we can. That's not being a husband in the way that God would have us be. And so how do we lead those of us who may be in a position of influence or authority? Are we serving those others, or are we serving ourselves? A shepherd, a good shepherd, is always going to serve the flock. A second role of the shepherd is that he strengthens the weak and he helps those who are broken, those who are downtrodden, those who may be sick or diseased. Ezekiel chapter 34 and verse 4, he says to these wicked shepherds, "Those who are sickly you have not strengthened, and the diseased you have not healed, and the broken you have not bound up." Again, what good shepherd is going to see his sheep that has a broken leg and just say, "Psh, doesn't matter to me, I'm going to go on, leave you behind"? No good shepherd would do that. But he's going to take time to bind up that sheep's leg and even carry the sheep if he has to, because he cares for that sheep. These leaders have done the exact opposite. Instead of helping them, instead of strengthening them, they've sucked the life out of them. They've taken advantage of them so that they have become diseased because of them. And so a shepherd is going to value every sheep. He's going to value the sickly. He's going to value the weak. They may not necessarily contribute a lot to the flock, but he's going to care for them because they're his sheep. No good shepherd leaves a sheep behind. So a good shepherd is going to take time to be with those who may be weak. And certainly that's going to take a lot of time, especially if we're thinking about spiritual shepherding here. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 and verse 14, the Apostle Paul commands not just shepherds of a congregation, but really all of us in a way that we do this work. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 and verse 14, "We urge you, brethren, admonish the unruly, encourage the faint-hearted, help the weak, be patient with everyone. And when you're helping the weak, that takes a lot of time. Sometimes it can be emotionally draining. Sometimes it can be discouraging. But that's the work of shepherding. The work of shepherding, after all, is hard. It's other-serving. It is a selfless work. And so he spends time with those who may not necessarily fit in with the rest of the group. With those who are grieving, with those who are suffering. It's a hard, it's a tiresome task, but he does it because he loves the sheep. A shepherd is going to take time to know the sheep, to know those who are weak, to know those who may be suffering, or know those who need encouragement, instead of keeping his distance from them. So you consider the role of an elder now, and you consider his work. A lot of it has to do with people. It's about spending time with people and learning about people and knowing the things that they struggle with and trying to reach out to them and helping them, being there for them in their times of trouble and their times of grief and their times of spiritual weakness. That's the role of a shepherd, is to help those people. An elder's job is to work with people in the same way that a shepherd's job is to work with those sheep. And along the same lines, the shepherd's job is to look for those that may be wandering or those that may be lost in the woods or lost, separated from the flock. Again, in verse 4 of Ezekiel 34, the Lord says, "The scattered you have not brought back, nor have you sought for the lost, but with force and with severity you have dominated them." A good shepherd, if he loses one of his sheep, he's gonna go find it. It's easy to say, well, one lost isn't really that much lost, but he doesn't say that. He says one sheep that's lost is too many sheep that is lost. Reminds me of Jesus' parable in Matthew chapter 18, a parable that is probably familiar to us. In verse 12, Jesus says, "What do you think? If any man has 100 sheep and one of them has gone astray, does he not leave the 99 on the mountains and go and search for the one that is straying? If it turns out that he finds it, truly I say to you, he rejoices over it more than over the 99 which have not gone astray. So it is not the will of your Father who is in heaven that that one of these little ones perish." You know who's going to make a good elder? A good shepherd over God's people? Is someone who takes verse 14 very seriously and takes it to heart. That the Father in heaven does not will that one of these little ones perishes. That when he sees someone who might be spiritually weak, he goes to that person. When he sees one who is going through some tough times, he goes to them and helps them and tries to find out, how can I encourage you? He's the one that sees a new Christian who might be struggling with something or needing some help, and he says, "I'm going to help that person. Or at least I'm going to find help for that person." That's the kind of person that makes a good elder, good shepherd, the person that has the heart of Jesus. When he sees sheep who are distressed and dispirited, like sheep without a shepherd, what did Jesus do in Matthew chapter 9? He taught them. He fed them. And he sent his disciples out to do the same thing. That's the kind of person, that's the kind of man that's going to make a good shepherd. One who has a heart for souls. One who sees the need, the spiritual needs of others, and not someone who's like the Pharisees. Remember the Pharisees? One of the reasons Jesus told the parable of the prodigal son and the lost sheep is to point out to the Pharisees that they didn't have the heart of the Father. The Father seeks for his son. He mourns for his son. And when his son returns home, he rejoices. But the Pharisees didn't do that. When the Pharisees saw the sinners surrounding Jesus, they said, "Boy, that's ridiculous that Jesus, the prophet, the Son of God, would spend time with those people." A good shepherd has the heart of the Father and the heart of Jesus to spend time with those who need Christ. A good shepherd seeks those who are wandering and lost. But a good shepherd is going to go beyond that, and he's going to protect the flock from ever being lost. He's going to be proactive in protecting the flock from predators. In Ezekiel chapter 34, once again in verse 5, God says, "They were scattered for lack of a shepherd, and they became food for every beast of the field and were scattered. My flock wandered through all the mountains, and on every high hill. My flock was scattered over all the surface of the earth, and there was no one to search or seek for them. Because these shepherds didn't care for the flock, then the flock scattered. And because of that, the flock had no one to protect them. Again, you know, sheep, the image of sheep is sometimes lost on us, but sheep are not the brightest creatures in the world. Sheep are completely helpless without a shepherd to provide for them. They're defenseless. And so they depend entirely on a shepherd to shield them, even at great personal cost. Again, it reminds me of John chapter 10, when Jesus is speaking about the fact that he is the good shepherd. Notice what Jesus says he does for the sheep. John chapter 10, verse 11, "I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. He who is a hired hand and not a shepherd, one who is not the owner of the sheep, he sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and flees, and the wolf snatches them and he scatters them." Jesus is basically calling out the spiritual leaders here and saying, you're the hirelings who don't care about the sheep. Jesus would tell the Pharisees on another occasion, you devour the widows' houses, and for a pretense you make long prayers. But in contrast, Jesus says, I am the good sheep, and I am willing to lay down my life for my sheep. In verse 13, he flees, the hireling, because he is a hired hand, and he's not concerned about the sheep. But I am the good shepherd, and I know my own, and my own know me. A good shepherd is going to protect the flock, even at great personal cost. Whether that's money, whether that's his time, his energy, maybe it's his reputation, maybe it's the influence that he has, he is going to protect the flock. And even he's going to be willing to stand up and against any of the sheep who are the ones who are devouring the flock. Go back to Ezekiel chapter 34 for a moment. And in Ezekiel 34, God kind of changes his metaphor here. Instead of talking about the shepherds and to the shepherds, he begins talking about the sheep and how some of the sheep had been bully sheep, basically. In verse 17, he says, "As for you, my flock, thus says the Lord God, behold, I will judge between one sheep and another, between the rams and the male goats. Is it too slight a thing for you that you should feed in the good pasture, that you must tread down with your feet the rest of your pastures? Or that you should drink of the clear waters, that you must foul the rest with your feet? As for my flock, they must eat what you tread down with your feet and drink with what you foul with your feet." So he's saying that it wasn't just the shepherds who were abusing the people. It was the people who were abusing the people. The people were mistreating one another. Figuratively speaking, when they went down to the water to drink, the bully sheep would get in the water and stomp around, stir up the dust and the mud so that the people couldn't drink the water. They would go out into the green pastures and stamp on the green pastures and the grass and mistreat the sheep that way. And a good shepherd is going to be one who's willing to stand up to someone like that. Someone who is selfish and persistent about his will. And so you think about, again, an elder serving in the local congregation. In Acts chapter 20, the Apostle Paul gives the Ephesian elders this charge in verse 28. "Be on guard for yourselves and for all the flock, among which the Holy Spirit has made you overseers to shepherd the church of God, which he purchased with his own blood. I know that after my departure, savage wolves will come in among you, not sparing the flock. And from among your own selves, men will arise, speaking perverse things to draw away the disciples after them." And this is where the spiritual strength comes in, where the shepherd must stand and he must fight for the unity or the purity of the flock of God. And then finally, a good shepherd is going to provide direction and purpose for the flock of God. It's again in Ezekiel chapter 34 in verse 6. God says that the sheep were scattered all over the mountains. And they were just wandering around. They had nowhere to go, nowhere to lead them, no one to tell them where to go. There was no one to search and seek for them. And that's what a shepherd does. A shepherd gathers the flock and he gives them a direction. He says, this is where you can find good pastures. This is where the water is. Don't go there, because if you go there, you're going to fall off a cliff. Or, you know, don't go to that lion's den, but instead go here. Go to where the good pastures are, where you can find food. Frankly, sheep are too stupid to think for themselves. Obviously, that doesn't apply entirely to Christians, but we need direction, don't we? As Christians, we need a sense of direction, a sense of focus, and an eldership helps us with that. And so, not only adults in a congregation, but you think also about children. Children need direction, don't they? And as parents, it is our job to be that shepherd for them, to guide them to where they can find the green pastures of God's Word. They need the example. They need us to sit down with them and teach them. And of course, we adults, we wander too. And so we need the spiritual focus and the guidance that the shepherds provide for us. 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 3, one of the roles of a shepherd is to provide example to the flock. An example for us to follow. You see those pictures of a shepherd leading his flock, going before the flock, and the sheep are following after them. That's the role of a shepherd. And of course, all of this is exemplified perfectly and fulfilled in Jesus, our good shepherd. In Ezekiel chapter 34, later on in this chapter, God says, because the shepherds whom I appointed to lead my flock, since they failed, God says, I'm going to appoint a better shepherd. In fact, God says, I will be the shepherd. In verse 11, he says, thus says the Lord God, behold, I myself will search for my sheep and seek them out. As a shepherd cares for his herd in the day when he is among his scattered sheep, so I will care for my sheep and will deliver them from all the places to which they were scattered on a cloudy and a gloomy day. I will bring them out from the peoples and gather them from the countries and bring them to their own land. And I will feed them on the mountains of Israel by the streams and in all the inhabited places of the land. I will feed them in good pasture. And their grazing ground will be on the mountain heights of Israel. There they will lie down on good grazing ground and feed in rich pasture on the mountains of Israel. In verses 23 and 24, God says, then I will set over them one shepherd, my servant David, and he will feed them. And he will feed them himself and be their shepherd. And I, the Lord, will be their God. And my servant David will be prince among them. I, the Lord, have spoken. So here's a thought question for us. At this point in Ezekiel's life, David was long dead, right? But God says, I'm going to appoint over them my servant David, who's going to shepherd them. He can't be talking about literal David, but he's talking about Jesus, who was the son of David. Jesus became our good shepherd, and he is our good shepherd. And not only does he lead us in good pastures, does he provide an example for us, but he teaches us how we ought to lead and how we can put others before ourselves. So as we close tonight, there are three points of application that I want us to take from this lesson. Three questions I want us to ask. First of all, how do we view elders of a local congregation? Do we view them primarily as managers of a business, or do we view them as shepherds over souls? A lot of times we picture an eldership, we think about, you know, it's them sitting in a room with a table and discussing the business of the congregation, maybe the financial matters or the decisions that have to be made. Now, certainly that's a part of leading the flock of God, but that is not the entirety of leading the flock of God. The flock of God is composed of people who have souls, and that's the elder's job. The elder's job is to focus and feed those souls, to protect those souls, to help those souls, to help them grow. I'm afraid sometimes we borrow the view of leadership from a business world today, and we apply that to the local congregation. We think the elders are the managers, kind of like, instead of thinking of them as shepherds, we think of them as ranchers who are kind of at a distance, managing this huge ranching operation where they're mass producing sheep, and the ranchers are the ones at the top of the food chain who are kind of just writing the checks and making the decisions. No, a shepherd is with the sheep. He spends time with the sheep because that is his job. His work is accomplished while he's among the sheep. And certainly this doesn't minimize the authority that an eldership has. They still have authority to make decisions, but they do that in the capacity of, in the interest of the sheep, and in the interest of watching over their souls. And so the elders are not just decision makers or managers of the church. Their work is to watch over their souls. In Hebrews chapter 13, in verse 17, it says, "Obey your leaders and submit to them, for they keep watch over your souls as those who will give an account." Now think about that task. The responsibility and the stewardship over someone else's soul. That is a huge task. I think that's why he goes on to say, "Let them do this with joy and not with grief, for they would be unprofitable for you." But think about it, someone serving as an elder, there's a huge weight on their shoulders. But they take that weight with joy, understanding that it's a tough task, yes, but it's a blessing of a task. And it's an honorable task, and he's doing a good work in the Lord's kingdom. And so their primary job is not to serve as managers over God's flock, but to serve as overseers of our souls. Secondly, are we shepherding those over whom we have responsibility and influence? We've talked a lot about elders tonight, but I want us to apply this not just to an eldership, but any position in a relationship in which we have influence or stewardship over someone else. Think about us parents. Certainly, we have stewardship over our children's souls. Think about if you've got a work relationship where you've got oversight over someone else, you've got stewardship over someone. But especially in a spiritual relationship, how are we shepherding over those people? Are we helping their souls? Are we pointing them to God? And another point that I want to make along these same lines is that, you know, as we think about our families, especially those of us who are men, as we think about how we are leading our families, this is really our training ground for helping lead the flock of God. Over in 1 Timothy chapter 3, where Paul is describing the character of someone who is able to serve as a shepherd, 1 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 4, he says, "He must be one who manages his own household well, keeping his children under control with all dignity. But if a man does not know how to manage his own household, how will he take care of the church of God?" So those of us who have children at home, let us consider how we are leading our children, shepherding our children. This is where we learn how to help other Christians. As we discipline our children, as we teach our children, as we train them in the Lord, this is how we, as we grow up as men, we become leaders over God's people. This is how we learn to lead the flock of God, by leading our families. And along the same lines, consider also our relationship with our wives. You know, how are we leading our wives? How are we helping them spiritually? Because that's what the role of the husband is to begin with. Just like Christ loves us in a spiritual way to help our souls, husbands ought to love our wives, especially helping their souls. And so are we doing what we can to shepherd those over whom we have responsibility and influence? And then finally, are we developing servants before we're developing leaders? What I mean by this point is a servant, a true servant, is going to rise to lead if the need arises. Because he sees that need and he's going to know somebody's got to fill that role. A servant is going to do that. But you know, not every leader will stoop to become a servant, will he? Not every leader has a servant's heart. But a servant, a true servant, may have a leader's heart. And so we need to be focusing, instead of so much on, you know, we need to develop leaders in the church, which is true. First of all, we need to focus on developing hearts of servitude. Because that's what leaders really are to begin with. Leaders are first servants. Think about what Jesus says in Matthew chapter 20 to his disciples in verse 24. Matthew 20, verse 24 says, "Hearing this, the 10 became indignant with the two brothers." Two brothers that just called upon Jesus and asked Jesus, "We want the place of preeminence in the kingdom." But Jesus called them to himself and said, "You know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great men exercise authority over them. But it is not this way among you. But whoever wishes to become great among you shall be your servant. And whoever wishes to be first among you shall be your slave. Just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life a ransom for many. There's one lesson we learn from the life of Jesus. It is this, that serving others comes before leading others. And if we want shepherds at this congregation, which we do, and we need to be praying for that and working on that and developing that, but let's focus on how we serve one another. Because as we serve one another, then we learn to help one another. A shepherd is primarily a servant, is he not? Because he thinks about what's good for the flock. He leads them to where they should go. If there's one who's struggling, he carries them. That's the heart of a servant. And so if we want elders at this congregation, they're going to be among the men who are servants primarily. Shepherds are servant first. There's a lot of talk today. I don't know if you've ever sat in a meeting at work before where there's kind of an inspirational, motivational meeting where there's a lot of talk about servant leadership. You ever heard that phrase before? Servant leadership. That's a good concept. But let's consider what that means. A lot of people like the idea of being a leader, don't they? But how many people like the idea of being a servant? That's where leadership begins. Leadership begins with becoming a servant. Washing the disciples' feet. Washing the feet of those who are lost in the world, seeking them like Jesus sought them. So this is the work of a shepherd. And this is the work that we ought to be seeking out to do if we have responsibility over others. Well, if there's someone here tonight that is not a Christian, this is an opportunity for you in just a moment to think about your soul and to make your life right with God. If there's sin between you and God, you need to make that right. The good shepherd is going to lead your soul, but he can only do that if you're willing to follow. And so with that in mind, we're going to sing the song in just a moment, "I Have Decided to Follow Jesus." Is that the decision you're going to make tonight? You know you need to make that decision. And you know what you need to do to do that. To be baptized into Christ. To put the old man to death. And out of your faith in him, walk in his footsteps. If you need to do that tonight, please come to the front and we'll encourage you as we stand and sing this song.